Welcome to Irregular Climate, where we take a look at the irregular climate in our atmosphere and the irrational climate of global warming denialism. On this week's show, the curious incident of Edward Wedgman and the copied report, the non-significance of the hockey stick, Cuccinelli and the witch, crew cleared again, exploding deniers, and the importance of coherence. I am Dan Mutal. The Wedgman Report has long been a rallying point for deniers. It was the product of George Mason University statistician Edward Wedgman and his students. It claimed to demonstrate that the hockey stick graph was fatally flawed. Now, one might wonder why a statistician would have been called to answer what is a paleoclimate question, or why Republican House Representatives Joe Barton and Ed Whitfield would ask Wedgman to report on this issue at all when the National Academy of Sciences had offered to create a National Research Council report on the hockey stick. National Research Council reports are run with a rigorous process run by independent monitors, with report authors and reviewers chosen to cover all relevant disciplines. This is standard practice. It results in an expert, unbiased, and independent analysis. When politicians need to understand complex scientific issues, the National Academy of Sciences is only too happy to help. And, in fact, this National Research Council report was conducted at the request of Republican Representative Sherwood Bollert, and it concluded that the basic conclusion of Mann et al., aka the hockey stick graph, was that the late 20th century warmth in the Northern Hemisphere was unprecedented during at least the last 1,000 years. This conclusion has subsequently been supported by an array of evidence that includes both additional large-scale surface temperature reconstructions and pronounced changes in a variety of local proxy indicators, such as melting on ice caps and the retreat of glaciers around the world, which in many cases appear to be unprecedented during at least the last 2,000 years. This conclusion is valid even if one shows that the original hockey stick is not perfect, something that is quite common of science at the bleeding edge. Mann's results have been replicated over a dozen times, and that is the bottom line. But the Wedgman report came to a different conclusion. It claimed that the hockey stick reconstruction could not be supported by the data, and that there was a social network of scientists tied to Dr. Mann that made independent studies not independent. So the deniers rallied around it. But the report has several problems. Last year, the blogger Deep Climate revealed some rather obvious plagiarism in the Wedgman report. It was literally a copy and paste job. Unambiguous plagiarism. But that was only the start of the problems with the report. John Mashey decided to look deeper, and what he found is startling. In a meticulously detailed 200-plus page report titled Strange Scholarship in the Wedgman Report, Mashey delves into the depths of the Wedgman Report. He starts like this. It has been a key prop of climate anti-science ever since it was promoted to Congress by Representatives Joe Barton and Ed Whitfield as an independent, impartial, expert work by a team of eminent statisticians. It was none of those. Among Mashey's findings in regards to the quality of basic scholarship of the Wedgman Report, we have of 91 pages, 35 are mostly plagiarized, but injected with biases, error, or changed meanings that often weaken or invert the original result. Some might thus also be called fabrication. Deep Climate found 10 pages that plagiarized uncredited sources, then 25 pages summarizing papers, but with extensive plagiarism. text of striking similarity to the originals totals 81% of the words, but 50% is word for word identical, cut and paste. One major fabrication does stand out. It is a distortion of a sketch already obsolete by 1992, but supported strongly by Wedgman and used repeatedly in the report. Of 80 references, 40 are not even mentioned or cited in the text, but just pad the bibliography. Many are irrelevant or dubious, such as a tabloid writer's 1987 Ozone article in a fringe technology magazine. Much of this is a science-seeming facade for a few key PR messages. Many of the science papers, even ones summarized, are mostly ignored. The team really only paid attention to a few papers. Now, such charges of plagiarism are very serious. Academia has a very low tolerance for plagiarism, and even tenured professors can be fired for such an offense. But not only did the report plagiarize, but it injected bias, error, and sometimes even changed the meaning of the original by weakening it or sometimes twisting it by 180 degrees. So, not only did the Wedgman report plagiarize, it didn't even do so accurately. Now, in regards to the independence of the Wedgman report, Mashey found that Barton and Whitfield rejected an offer of a normal National Research Council report, then recruited Wedgman via an obscure route likely to find a team to produce the desired results. Barton staffer Peter Spencer selected the team's papers and passed them from those behind the PR campaign, local think tanks, or close allies. They ignored standard good practices, but repeated many common anti-science messages, most from a well-evolved PR campaign by think tanks, their allies, and a few members of Congress. They spent many pages on science-seeming camouflage, but the key messages can all be found in a May 2005 think tank talk. They denigrated the work of relevant climate scientists, never talked to any, and often avoided their credible but inconvenient results. Pervasive bias is especially obvious in the highlighted side-by-side comparisons with plagiarized sources. The changes leap off the page. So in other words, despite claims of independence, the Wedgman report was anything but. The report was really just a rehash of old anti-science think tank talking points gussied up to look scientific. And if that wasn't bad enough, and it most certainly is, Wedgman and his team never bothered to talk to Mann or any of the scientists whose work they were investigating. So we are left with a bunch of people who are not experts, didn't talk to experts, and were fed talking points from people with a history of misrepresenting science. That just won't cut it, and that's just the start. In regards to the Wedgman Report's own review process, Mashey found that House Representative Ed Whitfield, who along with Joe Barton commissioned the report, claimed it was peer-reviewed. It was not. Wedgman and others claimed this to be like an NRC report, a National Research Council report. It was not. The National Research Council uses a rigorous process run by independent monitors. Report writers and anonymous at-the-time reviewers are chosen to cover all relevant disciplines. All commit to serious effort on a clear schedule. Barton and Whitfield rejected this standard process. Wedgman sent the report to a few statisticians of varying degree of closeness, but all known to him. Some were given only a few days to comment on a long report covering unfamiliar topics. Some gave strong advice that was simply ignored. Some were later surprised to find themselves claimed as reviewers. Fine statisticians' names were misused to lend unwarranted credibility to the report. So, not only was this report one-sided, but it wasn't peer-reviewed, even though it was claimed to be. And in regards to the misuse of social network analysis against climate peer-reviewed, Mashey found that with little expertise in such analysis, the Wedgman team plagiarized textbooks, then used incomplete analysis to make flawed claims. They claimed that co-authorship implied poor peer review, even wrongdoing, but with no evidence whatsoever. The team was poorly qualified to evaluate peer review in climate research, but key mission number two was to cast doubt, which they did. So, not only were the authors of the report not knowledgeable on paleoclimate issues, but they had no expertise in doing a social network analysis. Of course, none of this prevented Wedgman from concluding that climate scientists were up to no good. They also promised peer-reviewed statistics papers in various journals, but these never appeared. The bottom line, the Wedgman report plagiarized, but not accurately, sometimes completely changing the meaning of the original, was claimed to be an independent analysis, but was anything but, with links to various anti-science think tanks, while claiming that the peer review for climate-related papers was flawed because scientists know and sometimes talk to each other. And most infuriatingly, all of this was submitted to the U.S. Congress. Now that is a laundry list of some very serious accusations. But John Mashey doesn't make them lightly. As I mentioned, his report, Strange Scholarship in the Wedgman Report, is over 200 pages long and full of meticulously detailed analysis. The accusations are all well backed up, and one can check for themselves if they have any doubts. So the question is, what do we do about this? And this is where the story takes an ironic turn. Raymond Bradley, a University of Massachusetts professor who was the second author in the original hockey stick paper, was one of the people plagiarized by the Wedgman Report. Needless to say, he isn't happy about having his work plagiarized and having his work twisted beyond all recognition and then used to attack a paper he co-authored. So he did the obvious thing and complained to Wedgman's employer, George Mason University, stating, "Clearly the text was just lifted verbatim from my book and placed in the Wedgman Report. Talk about irony. It just seems surreal that these authors could criticize my work when they are lifting my words." George Mason University spokesman Daniel Walsh has confirmed that the university is now investigating the allegations that the Wedgman Report was plagiarized and contained fabrications. This is a good start, but most people, including myself, will miss the significance of what this means. Thankfully, Eli Rabbit, in his usual lagomorphic style, explains. When a formal research or professional misconduct complaint is received, universities are required to open an inquiry, as opposed to an investigation. This is a less formal procedure, usually conducted by administrative personnel with or without academics. It is very confidential. Only when the inquiry finds strong evidence of misconduct is a formal investigation opened. In other words, it is very likely that a confidential inquiry has already taken place. Remember, Deep Climate's original discovery of plagiarism happened last year, and it was obvious cut-and-paste style plagiarism. Anyway, this inquiry likely already found enough strong evidence to warrant a formal investigation. Now, that should be sufficient for the academic misconduct issues. Such investigations are the proper way to deal with these issues. But the Wedgman Report is about more than just plagiarism. there is ample evidence that the Wedgman report was manufactured to arrive at a specific outcome and mislead Congress and everyone else. This is what John Mashey recommends. George Mason University ought to investigate many problems, as they are, as should several other universities and journals, the U.S. Office of Research Integrity, and perhaps the American Statistical Association for ethical breaches. At least four agencies, and these are federal agencies, may have possible fund misuses to consider. Some authors or publishers might pursue copyright issues. Congress and the Department of Justice should investigate the manufacture of the Wedgman Report. Possible felonies are covered by the U.S. Code 18 U.S.C. 1001, Misleading Congress, 371, Conspiracy, 4, Misprision, which might involve many more people. Strange scholarship in the Wedgman Report lists about 30 issues, not all for the Wedgman Report itself, but including derivations and related activities. Now, bad scholarship is one thing, but manufacturing a report to mislead Congress is something entirely different and much, much worse. Now, before going into other news, we need to put this whole hockey stick business into proper context. Because of the absurd amount of attention placed on the hockey stick, which is now over 10 years old and has been replicated over a dozen times, people frequently get the impression that this is the cornerstone of the evidence for anthropogenic global warming. But it isn't. In fact, the IPCC second assessment report, released in 1995, clearly stated that the balance of evidence suggests a discernible human influence on global climate. But it was 3 years later that man published the hockey stick. And it wasn't until the third assessment report, released in 2001, that the hockey stick was featured in an IPCC report. So clearly, the hockey stick is not instrumental to demonstrating that our CO2 emissions cause warming, even if it makes a compelling visual that resonates well with the public. But it is worth thinking about what would it mean if some new evidence demonstrated that the hockey stick was wrong, not that such evidence currently exists. Thankfully, a while back, Stefan Ramsdorf wrote a great article about this very topic at Real Climate. He states that even if we assume that the hockey stick was broken and medieval temperatures, after all, had been warmer than the present, it wouldn't tell us anything about anthropogenic warming. The climate can change for many different reasons, and the cause for any particular change needs to be investigated. It cannot be found by looking at a temperature curve. Had medieval climate been warmer than the present, it likely would have been due to some natural causes. After all, the human influence back then, while not zero, was minuscule compared to the human influence today. So, this would only tell us that, in principle, natural causes can cause warming larger than what we've seen in the past decades. But we know that already. However, just because the climate warmed by natural causes in the past doesn't mean humans cannot have an influence. Each change in the climate needs to be investigated in order to determine why the change took place. Scientists call this attribution, and in the latest IPCC report, that would be the fourth assessment report released in 2007, almost 100 pages were spent summarizing the many attribution studies that pin the blame for the warming trend on our greenhouse gas emissions. A broken hockey stick changes none of that. Last week, I told you how Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli's witch hunt against Michael Mann was thrown out of court. Cuccinelli accused Mann of defrauding taxpayers by misusing grant money, specifically 5 grants. The problem is, of those 5, 4 grants were federal and thus outside of Cuccinelli's jurisdiction. And the 5th grant predates the Virginia Fraud Against Taxpayer Act, an act that is not retroactive. Oh, and according to the judge who threw out Cuccinelli's suit, there was no evidence of fraud. Even some of Mann's fiercest critics, like Steve McIntyre, have stood up in support for Mann, calling the suit dangerous political interference with the scientific process. So, even the very people who think Mann is wrong don't think he committed fraud. Well, Cuccinelli is back. And in the words of the Washington Post, he seems determined to embarrass Virginia. He has refiled a lawsuit and worked around the problems that crept up in his first attempt. First, he limited the scope of the suit to those grants that actually lie within his jurisdiction, and used a clever trick to include the state grant, even though it was granted to Mann before the Virginia Fraud Against Taxpayer Act became law. See, some of the money of that grant was likely spent after the Fraud Act became law. So, according to Cuccinelli, even if Mann spent $5 of grant money after the act became law, then Cuccinelli can launch his lawsuit. But there is another problem that I have not covered on the podcast before. Despite the fact that Cuccinelli bases his suit on the hockey stick-related ClimateGate emails, which were found to be totally benign, and the Wedgwin Report, which, as we discussed earlier, is anything but an accurate analysis, the state grant Cuccinelli is targeting has nothing to do with the hockey stick. The grant was given and used to make measurements of vegetation in the African savanna and determine how they interact with the atmosphere. So, how does Cuccinelli get around this problem? Simple. You see, Mann lists the hockey stick paper in his resume. And that certainly misled the grant reviewers, and therefore, Mann committed fraud. Somehow. Some kind of fraud, I'm sure of it. The logic behind this suit is so torturous that it is abundantly clear that this is just a fishing expedition. He wants to convict Mann of something. Anything, and he is willing to waste taxpayer dollars in order to do it. Which is ironic, since Cuccinelli's publicly stated motivation for this lawsuit is to recover taxpayer money. This lawsuit sets a dangerous precedent. The reasoning behind this suit is so poor that, if successful, could grind scientific research to a halt. Something which I think Cuccinelli might be perfectly okay with. In the suit, Cuccinelli states that Mann knew or should have known that the published papers contained false information, unsubstantiated claims, and or were otherwise misleading. Specifically, but without limitation, some of the conclusions of the papers demonstrate a complete lack of rigor regarding the statistical analysis of the alleged data, meaning the result reported lack statistical significance without a specific statement to that effect. Real Climate has broken down what this means for scientists, saying, in other words, if you publish a result that might turn out to be statistically weak or with understated error bars, even if this was in no way deliberate and regardless if you were aware of it at the time, Cuccinelli thinks that this is equivalent to fraud. And any grant that you apply for that even cites this paper would therefore be a false claim under the statute. Cuccinelli is specifically not stating that deliberate scientific misconduct must have occurred. All you need to have performed is an inadequate, according to him, statistical treatment, or you made an unsubstantiated claim. This would clearly open up pretty much the entire literature to fraud investigations, since one can almost always improve on the statistics. You didn't take a temporal autocorrelation into account in calculating the trend? Cuccinelli thinks that's fraud. You didn't fully characterize the systematic uncertainty in the unknown unknowns. That too. You weren't aware of the new data that showed an older paper was incomplete? Too bad. This is not just an attack on Mike Mann. It is an attack on the whole scientific enterprise. Even more ironic is that in making this claim, Cuccinelli cites some fully discredited papers, which would certainly fall under Cuccinelli's definition of fraud, and the Wedgman Report, which, as we discussed previously, is likely an actual scenario of fraud. So I have to ask, when will Ken Cuccinelli launch a fraud investigation into Edward Wedgman's activities? And George Mason University, which happens to be Cuccinelli's alma mater, not doing so would constitute an obvious lack of integrity. Depressingly, this might only be the start of a larger witch hunt against scientists whose work doesn't adhere to Republican ideology. Representative Daryl Issa of California, the ranking member of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, said a probe of the ClimateGate non-scandal, well, he didn't say non-scandal, but it really was a non-scandal. Anyway, a probe of the ClimateGate non-scandal will top his environmental agenda if the Republicans take over the House next year and he gets the chairmanship. There have already been 5 inquiries into ClimateGate, and none of them found anything nefarious. Now, Republicans spend an inordinate amount of time complaining about the political influence of climate science, but spend a great deal of time talking about creating an atmosphere where the scientists are bullied into accepting party ideology. We can only hope that academic institutions are strong enough to withstand this political attack. Just in case you weren't yet convinced by the 5 inquiries into the Crewe email leak, the UK government has now officially vindicated the scientists involved. This hasn't gotten much coverage. I wouldn't know about it if not for the blogger Big City Lib, so I figured I should at least promote it here using my small soapbox. Here are some highlights. Openness and transparency should be the presumption. That said, there are a number of good reasons why it is not always possible or appropriate to make data available. In the instance of the Crewe, the scientists were not legally allowed to give out data. And we agree with the committee's comments on the right of scientists to comment informally on academic paper, noting that the scientific method relies on constructive challenge. We also note that the Muir-Russell review team investigated Crewe scientists' involvement in peer review and concluded that none of the allegations investigated represented subversion of the peer review process nor an unreasonable attempt to influence the editorial policy of journals. None of this is any news to anyone following the Crewe email leak debacle, but it is nice to hear it again. The scientists at Crewe whose email was stolen did nothing wrong. Nothing nefarious was found in the stolen emails, regardless of what the deniers might say. I guess I have to talk about the British 10-10-10 no pressure video that made the rounds earlier this week. It starts out in a classroom setting with a teacher explaining the importance of cutting greenhouse gas emissions and asking the students to work to reduce their own carbon footprint. She then asks who would be willing to try and do this, and most students raise their hands. But a few surly-looking students don't. And the teacher says that's fine and there's no pressure. She then pushes a large red button and the surly children explode. The gag is then repeated 3 more times in different scenarios, at a business, with a soccer, or more accurately, football team, and with Gillian Anderson of X-Files fame as she does the voiceover for the ad itself. Okay, so this was shocking. I didn't expect people to be exploded. And for the record, irregular climate has a strict no-exploding policy. don't believe the rumors regarding my old co-host. And this video even has some similarities to some old Monty Python videos. How Not to Be Seen comes to mind. But unlike those, the 10-10-10 video just wasn't funny. At least I didn't think so. It was dumb. But as usual, such blunders reveal more about the deniers than anyone else. James Delingpole, who astonishingly gets paid to write for The Telegraph, claims that this video has revealed the environmental movement's snarling, wicked, homicidal misanthropy that lies beneath its cloak of bunny-hugging righteousness. That's right, we secretly want to explode people. But despite our ability to conduct a massive conspiracy that involves entire scientific institutions and governments from around the world, we fail to realize the reaction of publicly demonstrating our plan to explode people. Watch out, you could be next. I'll give Randy Olson, a scientist turned filmmaker, the final word. I think the film was horribly offensive. I also think Stephen Colbert should be boycotted for making a mockery of the U.S. Congress. Jon Stewart should be punished for his unwillingness to treat serious American politics seriously. And South Park should be banned altogether. Given the desperate state of today's world, more violent and filled with hatred, pain, and suffering than at any time in history, there is simply no place for this stuff. It is time for humor to be added to the list alongside polio and tuberculosis as things to eradicate in our lifetime. Up next, we have Professor Stefan Lewandowski from the University of Western Australia on the absolute importance of coherence.
Suppose a bloke drifts up to you and says, "Apples don't exist." While your eyebrows are still rising, he adds, "But they grow naturally on trees." What? Apples don't exist, but they grow naturally on trees? Surely you wouldn't trust that bloke with the lives of your children if their future depended on logical coherence. Now suppose you walk down the street and some other guy sidles up and says, "The price of sheep is unknown, but I'd buy some now because they're cheap." Excuse me? The price of sheep is unknown, but they're cheap. No point trusting that bloke with your kids' lives either. Now here's a surprising thing to think about. Your kids' future and the future of their kids very much depends on logical coherence. Very much hinges on protecting them and their future from the incoherent claims of so-called climate skeptics. One of the reliable insights of philosophy of science has been that scientific knowledge is virtually never incoherent. In science, the hallmark criterion of whether you can possibly be right is whether or not you are coherent. If you're coherent, you might be right. If you're incoherent or contradict yourself, then you are most likely wrong. The beauty of this is that you don't even need data or peer-reviewed science to be sure. If an argument is incoherent or mutually contradictory, then you can be fairly confident that it is wrong or stated for entertainment purposes only. What does this have to do with so-called climate skeptics? Everything. Because the sum total of so-called skeptic arguments is an incoherent muddle of contradictions. On a Monday morning, your resident skeptic might tell you that global warming doesn't exist. On the Monday afternoon, she may tell you that the warming is all natural, just the same way that non-existent apples grow on trees. Nothing this incoherent can be right. And on Tuesday, a so-called skeptic may drift into town and make claims about the temperature record not being accurate. He might also assure you that there's nothing to worry about because it hasn't been warming in the last 23 days anyhow. So, the sheep are cheap, but no one knows their price. Nothing this incoherent can be right. By Wednesday morning, your excited skeptic, so-called, may have invented the possibility that the sun is causing global warming And by afternoon tea time, it might be cosmic rays, El Nino, or Inspector Clouseau, or whatever. Now, you may find it hard to believe that anyone could be so muddled, but in fact, it takes little effort to go to a skeptic, so-called, website, and dig out dozens, if not hundreds, such contradictions. Hundreds of instances in which apples were said not to exist, but then happily grow on trees. Hundreds of clear indications that this so-called skepticism amounts to little more than muddled mutterings. There is, of course, a coherent alternative. It is the coherent and overwhelmingly supported scientific fact that the Earth's climate is warming and that humans are largely responsible for that. That is coherent, backed by peer-reviewed science, and endorsed by all major scientific organizations in the world. For more details about the importance of coherence in science, and to comment on this piece, visit www.skepticalscience.com, which informs about climate change by relying entirely on the peer-reviewed literature.
That's it for this week's show. Show notes will be posted at irregularclimate.com. Also at the website, we have plenty of RSS feeds for subscribing to the podcast. We are available in the iTunes Music Store and the Zune Marketplace. We have links to our Twitter and Facebook pages. Follow us and send us feedback. Tell us what we are doing well and what we need to work harder on. Also, if you feel so inclined and want to support the podcast, you can donate to Irregular Climate via PayPal. The links are all on the website. Now, if you're unable or unwilling to donate, please continue to download and listen. And why not write a review or tell a friend to download and listen? That, in and of itself, supports the show and helps it grow. I am Dan Mutal. You can follow me online at ofdan.ca, where you can see links to my blog, my Twitter feed, my Flickr feed, and everything else I do online, including my brand new photography website, Eye of Dan. Thanks, and until next week, try and stay regular.